Hello and welcome to How to Save the World with myself, Tim Batt.
And me, I'm Waveney Worth.
This is a sustainability podcast. If you're a new listener here, kia ora, welcome. Come on in.
I love how you introduce it every time, like for people who've never tuned in before.
This is a real thing from my radio days.
It's very professional.
Don't know who's a new listener. This is a podcast for people who want to live sustainably but don't know how yet. We're going to try and help.
Yes, we're very good at that because we don't really know a whole bunch of stuff either. We're just, you know, trying to figure it out too.
We have our little areas, but the thing that we do have is a bit of focus and a bit of time, so we do some research and figure things out, which is exactly what this episode is all about. We've got a Facebook group, or a page rather, facebook.com/howtosavetheworld. You should definitely go and click on it and like it. But from that page, we get some fantastic questions from the people who listen to the show. And we wanted to take a bit of time today to try and answer them.
Yeah, we ran a competition a couple of months ago. Got way more questions because it was a competition asking people to give us some questions. We got heaps more than we thought we would. But also, we've just had people messaging us and asking us to do special episodes, which we did. The waste to energy one was one. That was our most requested one.
And it was great. I learned a lot, by the way. If you haven't listened to that episode, and based on the stats, you probably have. Whew, top ep.
It's a good one. And we're actually going to do a couple of other episodes based on your suggestions as well. Like, a surprising number of you are actually interested in legislation.
You're surprised by that?
I'm surprised by that because I'm not myself particularly, but I get that it's really important, and there's so many pieces of legislation that could be in place that aren't, or ones that are in place that could be more helpful, and there's a lot of things that are currently up for consultation as well. Mm-hmm. So we can get into that in the new year and other things, but today we are going to have a look at a bit of a cluster of questions that have come through, mostly around packaging and the roles that the government can play, businesses can play, and that us as consumers can play. But what I do really want to sort of knit in a range of questions that you've asked. So I'm going to actually start with a random one that's got nothing to do with that.
Okay, cool. Should I read it out? This is from Hamish, yeah?
Yeah.
Hamish has written to us with the following. According to Dr. Paul Hawken in the latest National Geographic, he has stated that the updated Project Drawdown solutions to climate change, regenerative agriculture will be number one. How can such a big problem, vis-a-vis agriculture, turn into such a big solution?
Do you get it? Do you get the question, Tim?
I do. It was very well explained, in spite of my reading, my stilted reading.
So I checked out the Drawdown website, which for those of you who don't know, is a website based on a book where Dr. Paul Hawken has looked at, basically he's brought together a huge amount of research from international scientists and researchers to look at how we can get this carbon that we've got in the air out of the air. So not looking at all these measures to stop putting it in the air, like flying less, but actually how we can get it out of the air.
Cool.
and to actually start doing something to mitigate climate change.
That feels like something that's a bit of a moonshot but could do real, you know,
well, that's what we
positive damage. Yeah, I was going to say damage, but damage in a good way. Damage to the problem.
Yeah, so exactly, damage to the problem. And yeah, I didn't see this because it sounds like Hamish has actually had some more recent information from Dr. Paul Hawken. But from checking out the website, it isn't mentioned as the number one. Strangely, the refrigerants are actually the number one thing that are mentioned.
Freons.
I don't know.
That weird gas. I'd only know that because of, I think, the last listener question set we did.
Yeah,
I
right.
I did a bit of research when we banned. Oh, no, it was a good news episode banned CFCs, hairsprays and fridges and stuff.
Well, they're still knocking about as a bit of an issue. But it's really interesting that this, and so obvious actually, that this has been identified as a large contributor to how we can get carbon out of the atmosphere. And the short answer to this question, how can something, which essentially his question is, how can something that has been so harmful with agriculture turn into like the biggest solution that we have? Well, the answer to that is just listen to the soil episode that we did.
That is a really good point.
Yeah, because why talk about it again here when we did really, like, it just blew my mind.
To recap a little bit from the Soil episode, should I tell you what I remember? You did all the research.
What's the take home that you've remembered?
The big things that blew my mind were, number one, the fact that how we farm at the moment in terms of tilling the soil on these huge industrial scales, like that very act is releasing an immense amount of carbon into the atmosphere. So that kind of blew my mind. It wasn't as a result of any complicated process down the road of agriculture or anything, but literally just upturning the soil all the time, that is releasing all this carbon up. And the other one was just, I don't really like have the fact around this, but just the idea of how powerful and different and useful and positive different farming methods can be. So I've forgotten the term, but the diverse farming where you like
there's lots of terms, regenerative agriculture.
Yeah. And is that the one where you kind of use plant solutions for, instead of how people use Roundup at the moment, basically you use like combinations of different plants that keep out certain weeds and certain pests?
Yeah, there's just heaps of solutions and that's one of them. Yeah.
So and
but the thing is that it's super simple.
Yes.
It's just a different way of doing something.
A few tweaks, and instead of this huge amount of carbon being released by the soil, we completely flip it on its head. And it actually sequesters carbon down into the soil to stay there.
Yeah.
And I know, and we will do this episode at some point in the future, fungi's got a big part to play in that as well. And I remember that from the movie that we saw. What is it called?
2040.
That's right. Yeah.
Thanks to Ecotricity, actually. Yes, we went along to their screening. It was awesome.
So definitely listen to that episode. That is probably a very good answer to that.
Okay. What's the next question there?
Sue has written to us, Wave. Sue says, how can we change people's way of disposing contaminated recycling in public recycling bins? At home, we're encouraged to rinse containers and bottles before putting them in the recycle bin. Perhaps people should be encouraged to take their recycling, i.e. takeaway containers, home to rinse clean. And it might pay to also put into that, like, why we have to do that.
Oh, yeah, good call.
Yeah.
If we put food.
We have an ep on this as well.
If we put stuff that's got food in it, like contaminated pizza box or a takeaway tray or whatever, into the recycling, then that is very likely to contaminate the recycling when it goes off to be reprocessed into something, to the point where it's either so useless that no one can get any decent money for it, so it takes the economic viability out of recycling, or to the point where you can't actually use the product.
So we get into this in our recycling episode. Luckily we have covered this in depth in a previous episode as well.
So lucky
we are, aren't we? And what are the plants called again?
Oh, the materials recovery facilities.
Thank you.
The MRFs, we call them in the trade.
At the MRFs, they sort the different materials out and then they get bundled up. And as Wave just said, when there's like too high a level of contamination, it lowers the grade of that whole bundle of stuff.
Mm.
And so it either has to be used for like a lower quality recycling process, or it potentially kind of gets sent to some country where it gets burned.
Mm. Or taken to the landfill. And the other thing is that people work in those facilities. Because there's the MRFs, which are the big sort of industrial ones. But there's also the community recycling facilities where you've got dozens of people involved just sorting things by hand, and it's not particularly pleasant 2 weeks in.
So to Sue's question on these public recycling bins.
Well, I could feel the passion there from Sue. It's a pet hate, totally get it. Just like when people don't indicate around roundabouts, that gets me. But yeah, I don't know, Tim, what do you think? Do you think that I could encourage you to take your recycling home with you when you're out? I don't know. I think it's a big call.
I think it's a big ask.
It's a big ask. I think we're not there yet. Like if you had those pizza places, for example, those food trucks, and then like 20 metres or 10 metres away from them is this little bin, and it's just always shoved full of pizza boxes.
Yeah.
It's like, are you really going to get anyone to take it home? It does seem like a big ask. But I guess the thing is that people are willing to make some changes. So I would just be starting with where they are willing to make those changes. It's just getting people to, it depends where you are on your journey, but getting people to take, like, for example, this is something I do. If I'm out and I get, say, a serviette, used serviette, I will, when I can, like if I've got a handbag or whatever, I will take it home with me and compost it, because I know that it would go into the landfill and create the methane and leachate. So I've got a bit of sympathy for this because mm-hmm. I do it myself, but I just think that, like, the options are just pretty tricky. We could ask people to take things home and clean them. We could have a wash station by the bin, but I don't think that's ever going to happen either. But one thing actually that we can do in our current situation is just to encourage people to put contaminated stuff into the rubbish bin instead of the recycling. That's probably the easiest one there. But there are more promising things in the pipeline, and the biggie here is that bottle return scheme that we've mentioned before, where we're going to soon again be getting 10 to 20 cents, something like that, back for every container or bottle.
That's in New Zealand.
In New Zealand, yeah. And it's that will be a real incentive for people to take it home or for others to collect what's been discarded.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to, if we just hold tight, we'll see a bit of.
Sue's asking the right questions. Sue's got her head in the right space. But for that specific example of, like, say, a pizza box or something, we need to be a bit realistic about what we can and can't achieve right now.
Sue's ahead of the game. Yeah, that's where Sue is. She's well out there.
So maybe to Sue we can say, you obviously have the good knowledge on how this affects recycling, and you can maybe form your tight little circle around, you can do the right thing and tell those people who are in your immediate friends and family circle how important it is for them to do the right thing.
Yeah, I hate doing that myself. I just role model stuff and, yeah, pick my battles. But, yeah, I mean, what a legend. What a total legend this woman is. Sorry we couldn't be more helpful, Sue. It's just you've picked a really hard one. Public place recycling, so fraught. Actually, you know what, Sue? If you keep listening to this episode, some of the other questions are bringing out some stuff that's in the pipeline that is actually quite hopeful, I think, that can really change the face of plastics in New Zealand.
Good question, tricky problem. We don't have all the answers. Angela has written to us, Wave. And Angela has asked, why is New Zealand so far behind in banning single-use plastics? What are they waiting for? What are we waiting for? The research and the science is there, so why is it still legal?
Do you think that's a rhetorical question? Because I'm actually going to treat it as a real one and talk about why New Zealand is so far behind in banning single-use plastics. Also, I wanted to say before we get into why we are so slow is that there is a lot happening. Yes, we're behind where we could be for sure, but this is the third time this year that the government's actually announced something right after we record, or in this case, since Angela's asked the question. So the Prime Minister's Chief Science Advisor has released a Thinking Plastics report in December 2019, a recent release, and it's the first target will be moving away from single-use plastic packaging and beverage containers made from PVC and polystyrene. Reaction, please, Tim.
I don't understand what that means in terms of, like, what's the actual change?
Oh, they're going to legislate for change. Cheering and clapping. So there's a report that's been released saying that it's not a target as such, but it's an intention that the government's signalling to move away from single-use plastic packaging and beverage containers from two particularly difficult plastics, which is PVC and polystyrene.
That is awesome.
It is. That's better. That is awesome. That is so awesome. So PVC's number 3 and polystyrene's number 6 with those little plastic recycling numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
They're the tricky ones, eh?
Well, 3 to 7s really are all a bit tricky, but those ones are particularly problematic. In terms of, they're not really great for our health. It's interesting that this aligns. They happen to be the ones that are very questionable for our health, very difficult to meaningfully recycle. And Yeah.
I reckon, and this is a little bit anecdotal, but based on my experience, there is some pretty exciting market-based solutions for this stuff as well. Because what we're seeing at the moment is such a huge amount of attention paid by the public, by the consumers, basically, on more responsible companies in the space of ethical packaging, things that can be easily disposed of or recycled in a meaningful way.
Totally.
Without harm to the planet.
Yeah.
That some really cool solutions are coming out of it, and particularly around like the serving of food. People are looking to overseas. Southeast Asia use certain kind of leaves to serve food in, and that sort of stuff is starting to trickle in to certain forward-looking companies, which will eventually become more and more mainstream. So at the same time that there's government attention being paid to this,
yes,
and them actually listening to the scientists and these reports that they're releasing around the difficulty around recycling these materials, there's a real desire driven from the bottom as well, not the
top.
Yeah,
there really is. And it's so important. I guess that's kind of a message that we always say, Tim, in this podcast, is that it's this – it's a power,
yeah,
that the consumers have, that if we don't exercise it, nothing happens.
Absolutely.
But the same can be said for also the government and also the businesses. And in this case, we've got all three that are actually quite keen to make some changes. So
we can kind of apply pressure from both directions, from the top down,
yeah,
in terms of trying to get the government to change the laws and pay attention to these things and legislate, and then also support and uplift these companies that are making great decisions now.
Yes, yeah, then it's interesting.
Things are going to happen so much quicker.
Yeah, I'm forever hopeful. So this report also, so if you thought that was good, they're also looking at phasing out single-use plastic for things that we have solutions, quite easy solutions for, like plastic cutlery, cotton buds, and my pet hate, fruit stickers.
Mm.
So I can actually, that is my equivalent, you know, with Sue talking about how much she hates this contamination in public place. That's for me. It's like I'm the lady at the supermarket just
shaking your fist,
anally taking off every sticker. I can't stand them.
I think the damage is done already, Wave.
Anyway, Angela, to answer your question, why so slow? I mean, who knows? But a couple of ideas. I've heard this before, because New Zealand's relatively small, and also because we're this sort of large scale farming sector is relatively new. Very new. It's only like 100 odd years old. Our soil is still relatively good, and like it gets a hammering with the way we farm, but we're only 100 years in, we're not 500 years in. And because of our relatively small population, our natural resources have so far suffered less from the pressure of development than heaps of other places. Like, we do go on about the state of our water, and we've obviously got huge ecological diversity loss. But if you compare that to some places like the Middle East or various places in Africa, actually almost everywhere else in the world, it's just human occupation has just degraded the environment so much more, to the point where they're hitting real limits,
yeah,
that are actually affecting people,
yeah,
and that's visible and it's affecting people's quality of life. And here I think that we've been lagging internationally because we can still ignore it.
Right, but that'll get so much if you look at the kind of graph, because everyone will flood into New Zealand because they go, oh, that's cool, and then we become the toilet of the world. The other thing is, I suspect we might be victims of the government's clean green tourism campaigns, and I know that particularly with our waterways, we sort of woke up to this reality about 4 or 5 years ago in a big public way, but there has been a general perception that we've been sweet, you know, and we're a pretty laid-back set of people, so we're like, nah, it's cool. We've got the ads up showcasing how clean and green we are, so I'm pretty sure it's all right.
Yeah.
And so the reality is probably quite disconnected with what, you know, just your average punter who doesn't think about these things too much has in their head.
Mm.
The good news is that's changing. The public perception is being more aligned to the reality of the trouble
that's having
in New Zealand.
That's right, and I guess that's – in fact, Colmar Brunton's done a poll where just – quite recent, well, in August 2019, where they found that 82% of New Zealanders wanted the plastic bag ban extended to other single-use plastics. So that's We're talking to almost everybody.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah. And another interesting thing is in terms of why the government's been so slow, I mean, you know, we've actually had this legislation around the WMMA, which is the Waste Minimisation Act, since 2008. So it's been over a decade that the government's had the power to be able to implement these changes that they're just catching up with now.
And so they sort of made a law that allowed them to make little laws under it.
Basically, yeah, that's right.
Right.
Yeah.
And they've just
very
been sitting
cool
on
piece
that,
of legislation.
They've
yeah.
been sitting on that authority since 08.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. And so they're just starting to kind of wake it up now, and it's why it's actually so easy for some of the stuff to change. And that's also why we need to sort of think through. It's great that so much is happening, but we just need to really be mindful that this is a great opportunity not to sort of take anything for granted. This is literally a once in a decade thing that's happening right now with
this
all of
is
these
when you push.
This is exactly it's when you push. But Eugenie Sage has also she totally called it, actually. She said
she's our associate minister for the environment.
Yes. That some people, this is her quote, some people might wonder why we can't just ban problem plastics overnight. So, Angela. and I mean, I'm sure there's a complex set of reasons, but she's highlighted that one of the reasons that it's best to signal what is wanted and allow innovative businesses to give them some time to take action. And also, she's highlighted that you can't push the alternatives if the public isn't ready. So in other words, she's saying that, yes, not to sort of excuse the last 10 years, but in terms of where the government's at right now, is that they're signalling things. They're saying this is what we want, and then they're stepping back. Obviously, you need to have the consultation around these things anyway. But they're putting it out there to give us all that opportunity to catch up.
I think that's savvy because even though it might not be the answer that people like us in our lovely little comfortable bubble want to hear, you know, there's already flack that the government's getting from people who aren't as conscious or focused on these sorts of issues about how quickly the government is moving in their minds to make these certain moves.
Well, I mean,
if you get too in front of your skis, you lose public support and then you lose elections.
It's a bit of it's a real dance. And there is, you know, there's been quite a bit of lobbying going on from the packaging industry and all sorts going on.
Mm.
Yeah. Anyway, hope that helps, Angela.
We have a question from Tomomi. I'm hoping that's how you pronounce it. My apologies if it isn't. What is the next achievable / realistic steps for businesses? I'm thinking e.g. supermarkets and or government after implementation of single-use plastic ban. Once I actually start looking around, I feel overwhelmed by all these plastic packets, even cucumbers wrapped in plastic. I feel like there is something more that can be done, not just bringing our own shopping bags.
What a legend. Thanks for your question, Tomomi. And firstly, this is awesome because it's exactly why industry lobby groups or associations were trying for a long time before it happened to avoid this ban on plastic bags, because they knew that people like you are going to make that connection and go, and then it's kind of like the beginning of the end, because until that point, there wasn't sort of any line drawn in the sand. It's like, oh, it's all okay.
Yeah,
and now
true.
What we've got at the moment is this arbitrary distinction, which is exactly what Tomomi's just recognized. Well, hang on, what's the difference? And that's no, she's not the only one. So many people are saying this now. I mean, what's the difference? Why are we banning a bag and not, you know, and we're still leaving the supermarket with all this plastic packaging? So, also, pretty.
So it's sort of like that was the point.
Yeah, it's just so exciting to see that people are connecting the dots. Feels like the sun's setting on this whole madness we've had of the 20th century of just all this unquestioned use of single-use plastic.
Mm.
And secondly, her question hits on the big three sectors. She mentions the government, she mentions businesses and us, and just says surely more can be done. So, and I also liked how she talked about achievable and realistic next steps. So this time last year, we had nothing really, in New Zealand. And then within the last 12 months, this is my fly-by-night summary, in July we banned, this is 2019, in July we banned the plastic bags. In August, the government consulted on their proposal to introduce mandatory schemes for priority products, including a scheme for single-use plastic packaging. That's awesome. In September, the government announced funding of the design of a bottle buyback scheme, which is huge. Yeah, massive. In November, the government proposed to increase the landfill levy by up to $50 over the next 3 years. So that's from $10 a tonne up to $60 a tonne by 2023.
That's going to get people thinking about how much
massive,
waste they're taking.
Massive, massive. At the moment, it's more expensive to recycle a mattress. So therefore, people gotcha. Put it in the landfill.
Gotcha.
And if this goes up from $10 a tonne to $60 a tonne, it means that it's the more expensive option is going to be to landfill things.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So we're not looking at, in most cases, technological barriers to recycling. It's just economic barriers. So the levy's really important. So that's exciting. And then in December, the Rethinking Plastics report came out, which is what we were just mentioning before, which is, again, another huge one looking at single-use plastic packaging, beverage containers made from number 3 and number 6, and other things in there as well. So that's huge in terms of what the government's doing or consulting on right now, mm-hmm. with plans to be doing stuff. Then for businesses, there's a lot as well going on, or in terms of next steps. So one thing could be looking at redesigning packaging to exclude those problem plastics, voluntary labelling. So these are things that aren't in place yet, but wouldn't it be awesome if some of these businesses who do care started putting on their packaging what it is and what you do with it?
Right. This is how you dispose of this.
Yes.
This packaging.
Yeah. Especially with the rise of bioplastics. So I'm noticing in supermarkets now, a lot of those fruit and vegetable bags, they say biodegradable on them.
Mm-hmm.
So my encouragement would be for businesses to, if they're going to use or any packaging, to put on it what it is,
yeah.
and put the certification on if it's a bioplastic, because if it's not, then it's pretty meaningless. It's just more problematic. And tell people what to do with it.
Kokako good at that.
Yeah, they're really good.
They've got on their package, they've got, you can put, you cut the triangle out, which I think they might have solved. I'm not sure if they've solved it yet. And that goes in the bin. The rest of it can go in your home compost.
Yeah, it's awesome. And some of it, some packaging can actually be reused as well. So the report says, or actually it's an SBN, which is the Sustainable Business Network, have a report where they say that 20% of current problem plastics could actually be reused. So
reused, brought back to the manufacturer. Yes, so
like for example, switching from a plastic milk bottle to a glass bottle that goes back to a sterilization plant.
What a futuristic solution to yeah, milking.
I know.
I remember putting the milk bottles out when I was a kid.
Oh, so do
it's
I.
It's a sad thing that's like gone away in my lifetime.
Yeah, it's kind of nostalgic, isn't it? But
bring
then
it back.
It's back already in small areas. There's pockets of it happening, actually just popping up like crazy everywhere. There's even a peanut butter place in Dunedin that does it, Bay Road Peanut Butter. And a really cool shout out to Plastic Free Pantry on Waiheke Island, which is, that I know of, New Zealand's only zero waste grocery delivery service. They're currently operating this delivery system where they have refillable bring back glass jars instead
awesome.
Of plastic packaging. So
great.
Cool stuff happening there. This is all just inspiration for businesses who care and they're trying to think through how they can be doing things differently.
Here's the thing about that's always got me. Surely it's cheaper as well. So it costs a lot of money to package these things up. If you could go to a refillery or some equivalent, there was some sort of supermarket distribution, like they have with beer where you bring your flagon
yeah.
and you can fill it up, and that you could kind of split between yourself and the company the savings in that. And I know that certain industries do it a little bit, but there seems like there's just such an opportunity for wholesale change in that area where you save 50 cents by bringing your own milk container back.
Like as a consumer.
As a consumer. And the company can save a little bit of money and they can pass part of those savings on to you as well. Like, why aren't we, surely better for everyone.
Because it doesn't work that way at all, unfortunately. It costs more. That's why we have gone down this road.
Mm.
All of the reuse, unfortunately, just costs more. Look at hospitals. They used to have the big sterilization units and used to reuse everything. And they moved away from that specifically for economic reasons to single use.
But the reason why it's economically viable is because all of the sort of externalities aren't factored into the price.
That's right.
But
and that waste levy is starting to incorporate those externalities back into the price.
Exactly. So as soon as those things actually get counted, you know, in a monetary way for how much damage they're doing to the environment, maybe there will be a bit more of a shift because it won't be cheaper anymore to just buy some
absolutely plastic container. Yeah, and the other thing is that consumers are leading a lot of this change as well. And so wherever the consumers are, that's where your money is. So if people want to have a glass bottle that they can take back, then businesses will provide that role.
You know, it's a good example of that. Our mate Glenn, Happy Cow.
Hey, milk, absolutely.
With his incredible portable milking device that milks the cow, pasteurizes it, and then has a point of sale terminal built into the machine.
So incredible. Check out the Happy Cow episode if you guys haven't caught it yet already.
This is just us shouting out.
Yeah, just a big shout out to ourselves. Speaking of shout outs, I just wanted to mention three good examples of businesses that are already have some home compostable packaging.
There is a difference, folks.
Yeah, exactly. And in some cases, still working on the certification. But Bostock's Brothers, do you know what you get with them? Chickens. Oh, whole chickens.
Cool.
Proper crisps, which is, potato chips and stuff.
And they're vegan.
Good. Unlike Bostock's.
They make.
No wonder you didn't know.
They make vegan salt and vinegar chips.
Good on them.
A lot of people don't.
And Trade Aid chocolate. All in a home compostable packet.
Nice.
Yeah. There's also the New Zealand Plastic Packaging Declaration that came out in July 2018, which I actually remember a couple of articles in the and stuff and other online stuff at the time where we talked about these big signatories coming on board like Coca-Cola and Unilever and Nestle all promising to use 100% reusable, recyclable or compostable packaging by 2025 or earlier.
Yeah, keep your bloody eye on that, folks.
Yeah, we will be. We'll be watching Countdown, Foodstuffs, New Zealand Post have all joined in. There's also funding available for businesses. So you've got the Waste Minimisation Fund and there's the Provincial Growth Fund, both huge funds of millions of dollars, very keen to support waste minimisation efforts and infrastructures. And this is kind of a long answer to your question, Tomomi, but you threw it in there with everything. You mentioned specifically supermarkets, next steps for supermarkets. So if you are listening and you are a...
If you are a supermarket,
have, for goodness sakes, have either no bags in your fruit and vegetable and just encourage people to bring their own fruit and vegetable bags. What you could have is the reusable, like a natural material, reusable fruit and vegetable bag for sale in the fruit and vegetable section. So sometimes they're for sale in a completely obscure part of the supermarket.
Right.
But I would put it right there.
Of course.
And actually look at phasing out the use of those single-use bags, regardless of what they're made of. Like if it's a biodegradable plastic, or it's just complicated. Most people don't actually know what to do with it at the end of life. But at ACT in Aussie, they are looking at actually doing that, phasing out the fruit and veg bags. So we've got a precedent for it. Yeah, which is cool. Wastemans, which is the industry group for the waste sector in New Zealand, have got a good compostability guideline looking at bioplastics, plastics, and they just talk through what to do and who the certifiers are. Give you a really good sense of what you should be doing. So that's the take-home message. I would check that resource out. And I can put that in the show notes of where to go. Mm-hmm. Here's a cool one. So Huckleberry have got, in some of their stores, have got like a, basically, you know, the beer chillers at supermarkets and you walk in.
Yeah.
They've got that for their fruit and vegetable section. So you kind of walk into a chiller, and it, so they don't have to have all the plastic packaging around everything because it's just
Oh, that's cool.
It's so cool. It's such a, yeah, a futuristic sort of a approach to it.
So is that because what the plastic's doing is sort of, and I'm sure a whole bunch of other nasty stuff as well, keeping it from perishing?
Yes.
But the natural way to do that is just to lower the temperature that it's being stored at.
Yeah, yeah.
Makes sense.
That's why with the cucumbers, it's only for those long ones that have the plastic on and the shorter ones don't, because they're different varieties and the long ones don't have such a thicker skin. And so they perish faster, whereas the shorter one, its skin does the same job.
Right.
Yeah.
Man, I never thought of that.
Funny thing, eh? Apparently,
we probably shouldn't be keeping fruit and veg at room temperature. Like, yeah, it is going to go bad in the supermarket.
Yeah, so that's cool stuff. Deli, you encourage people to bring their own containers. Bakery, provide paper bags, please. Always used to be my go-to to grab a paper bag for the bread. It's a good zero-waste solution. But
they kind of have to now, don't they?
Oh, but is this they're starting to replace some of those with plastic bags?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's about it. But she did mention what we can do as consumers as well. And so, and again, we've covered this in the recycling app, but just avoid plastics 3 to 7. If you want to know why, listen to that recycling episode. And the coloured plastics as well, even if they're 1 or 2, including those real stupid light-proof milk bottles. Please buy your milk in clear plastic if you're going to buy milk in plastic. And check out some of these changes. Some of these, I've been talking about supermarkets, assuming that you're not ready to make really big changes in your life. But I encourage you to check out the Rubbish Trips Regional Zero Waste Guides. And they've also got a Zero Waste Spot interactive maps for packaging-free solutions. And it actually just might be easier than you think finding retailers that are providing these solutions. Some of it's in supermarkets, some of it's further afield.
That will be in our show notes. That is in our show notes.
That is.
Okay, we've got a question from another Ange. What are the best resources for business to navigate waste packaging and doing the right thing? There is so much greenwashing by people who sell supposedly eco-packaging or disposal systems.
Great question, eh?
Yeah.
Quite easy to answer this. So it's all about certification, and Wastemans, again, can help with that. They've got a resources section about compostable packaging. They've got a range of guides, especially a quick guide to environmental claims for plastic products and packaging. And they've also got a list of commercial compost facilities, which is important because if you live in an area without one, then there's not much point in having a compostable packet that you can't compost at home. There's a list of compostable packaging suppliers that Auckland Council has put out. Again, I'll put that in the notes. For hospitality businesses, check out UYO. Aotearoa Cafe Directory. They've got heaps of resources on how to phase out single-use and disposable plastic items in your hospitality business. Also consider, we touched on this already, actually unpackaged systems, in other words, reuse systems. Not a lot of resources out there, but why don't you just go along and chat to some of the zero-waste stores in New Zealand that are already doing it?
Fantastic is whatever field you're in, if you work in an office, if you work whatever, if your business has done something cool or you've found some weird solution specific to your job or your workplace, can you fire it through to us? And maybe we'll share some of those just randomly on the episodes as we go along. So just go to facebook.com/howtosavetheworld and send us a message with maybe something that your workplace has changed recently in a bid to be more sustainable.
Brilliant. That'd be great. There's also good consultancies out there that can help you on that journey. Two of them have been our wonderful sponsors, our foundational sponsors, All Heart Waste Reduction Partnerships and Go Well Consulting. Both of these guys specialize in waste and packaging and really filling that gap for businesses that can't afford a full-time corporate sustainability officer. So definitely worth checking out consultancies in your areas that can go on that journey with you. SBN is another really reputable organization that can help you on your journey. That is the Sustainable Business Network. They have a report from 2018 called New Zealand's Plastic Packaging System, and that is really worthwhile checking out if you're a business looking to sort of tackle this issue for yourself and what your priorities should be and what your supports can be. And they've also got regional advisors. And then, of course, there's the Sustainable Business Council, which is SBC. And they tend to, I mean, you could check, if you're a business, check out either and see what's a good fit for you. SBC tends to be with larger corporation-sized businesses. SBN's more medium to large. SBC, the Sustainable Business Council, has also got a resource section with lots of guides and reports in it.
Awesome. So if Ange is getting in touch with us from a big, flaming, successful capitalist company, she can go SBC and otherwise SBN, Sustainable Business Network.
Gee, I hope they're happy with our broad brush.
It's important to have fun on this podcast, Wave. Our final question comes to us from Inderjeet, who won the Facebook competition, actually, when we were
one of the winners.
Soliciting for questions there. She was one of the winners. Government is spending millions in imparting knowledge about sustainability. Do you think our social behaviour will change toward this issue?
Ooh.
Has the government employed the right and knowledgeable people in these kinds of jobs? Big question.
I don't know. Gosh. Well, I don't know that last bit. I was employed there for a while in that sort of field.
So we can
say
yes.
Might be a biased answer. Yeah, I think they're awesome. They're all such wonderful people.
Well, then you probably can reply with some
authority. Yeah, I can actually talk about certainly my experience.
Yeah.
But I'd like actually love to know what prompted this question.
Well, we don't have her on the line.
No, we don't. No. Yeah, but she's right. When I stop to think about it, there are a lot of examples of programs from central and local government. There's EECA, which is that government agency promoting energy efficiency. They do TV ads.
Yeah, they've had that guy telling me to turn my light bulbs off for
years.
As long as
I've been around. The Almighty Johnson's guy.
Yeah, exactly.
He's like that god of cold stuff. Live Lightly is another one from Auckland Council. DOC, even, we forget, which is the Department of Conservation. Like that is funding for millions of dollars for conservation, which is all about the environment. And then, of course, there's the contestable funds. But actually, I think they're quite heartening. Again, there's millions of dollars that the government is putting rather into their own initiatives, backing community groups that are embedded in their various local regions that are able to harness volunteer support and local knowledge. So it's easy to hear millions and think, oh, you know, is this a good idea? But I mean, the reality is it's a national budget and, you know, we spend millions on defence and, I don't know, roading.
Yeah.
Millions. But anyway, a lot. And it all sort of seems to be okay, right? Like,
I think, yeah, that's absolutely right. It is easy to see these big budget numbers and go, but, you know, when it's
the
a national budget,
of,
the scale is a little bit different.
Yeah.
But in terms of your personal experience working in the field, do you feel like you were surrounded by people who were the right people for those jobs and thinking about the right sorts of things?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And it made me think, well, firstly, to answer your question, yes, I did feel that. But I think, I don't know, and I don't know if this is where Inderjeet's coming from or not, but whether or not they should be like experts and scientists and like leaders in their fields, or whether they should be essentially marketers and people who are good communicators. And personally, I feel that we want our scientists to be researching and communicating great if they are good communicators, but we need people who are able to take those findings and to create opportunities for people to exactly to hear that information and really connect and engage with it. So I think that yes, we've got the right people in those jobs. On the whole, I mean, crikey, what a question! I'm sure there's some people who should be perhaps doing other things.
Totally.
but in terms of whether it's successful, you know, she's saying, can we actually create social behaviour change?
Yeah, do you think our social behaviour will change towards
this
issue?
Yeah, well, for a start, yes, because it is changing.
Absolutely.
It's huge. I mean, who knows? You know, you can never pinpoint things. There's just so much happening all at once. But
well, the plastic bag ban was big. That has changed behaviour. And that is, I think, like you were saying before, opened everyone's minds to connecting other dots in the supermarket.
That's a
really tangible, I think, law change that you can attach to.
But Inderjeet's particularly talking about not law changes, but these behaviour campaigns.
True.
Yeah. And I think, do you know what really gets me angry, actually? It was, I guess, a few years ago before we could see that a few things were genuinely happening. Because what we need is for the government to legislate. And I was getting so frustrated because all they seem to be doing is running these behaviour change programs. And it's like,
Change the law.
It's
people
like
do it
you're
then.
Missing, you know, you're so powerful and you're not using your power, and instead you're trying to put it onto us as consumers to change and to try and navigate these systems that just aren't really that well set up. Like, mm-hmm. yes, as a consumer, I see that as my responsibility too, and that's what this podcast is about. But as a government lead, please don't just ask us to change our behavior. So I think without the government actually using its power in a really positive way to put some great legislation in place, then I would be very frustrated to see only the behavior change stuff happening. But the fact that they're doing both is really positive, because as we know, if the public's not ready for anything, then the legislation falls over. Mm-hmm. I think that the environmental sector is actually behind on the public health sector, and we've seen for decades really good campaigns that have genuine, we know that there's good research to show that they have changed behaviour around putting seatbelts on, drink driving, drug driving, and we know that they work, and I think that there's a lot to be learned in the environmental sector in that space.
Maybe it's because the public health one, it's all about you. It's like save your own life.
Yeah, true.
Improve your quality of your health.
Yeah, and I think the budget's been there. It's been recognised for longer that it's a real issue. Mm. Well, that's it from me.
Thank you so much to all the people who sent our questions. And thank you to Waveney, who did the research.
Took the time.
Figured out the answers to them. If you have any questions, please get in touch with us. Just post them on the wall there at facebook.com/howtosavetheworld. They don't call it a wall anymore. Now it's a feed, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know. Crazy kids, and you're changing social media lingo. I can't keep up.
And look how young you are, Tim. How do you think I feel?
You can't even log in to the website anymore. You're just like, how does this damn thing work?
Can't even find my computer.
We will catch you in the next episode. Thank you so much for listening. If you have the time and inclination, we would love it if you could leave us a little review. It helps other people discover the show. And I mean, why not flick us 5 stars? You know?
Yeah, why not? It's like painless.
It's an Uber driver. It costs you nothing. Just help out, would you? Cheers. And share it with a few friends.
Get some endorphins.
Catch you in the next episode. For now, bye-bye.
Bye.